The sutra we chanted just now is called Setting the Wheel of Dharma in Motion. Sometimes the question comes up, where's the wheel? It's in that section where the Buddha goes through all Four Noble Truths and talks about the duty appropriate to each and the fact that he had completed those duties. He's basically got two sets of variables. On the one hand, there's the truths, and on the other hand, there's the duties, and the question of whether they're completed or not. In an ancient Indian text, when you would go through all the various permutations of different variables like that, listing them all, it was called a wheel. In English, we'd call it a table, because it would be presented on a page like a table. But in those days, they envisioned it as a wheel going around the horizon, imagining each separate variable. You got around to completed the circle. And the fact that that is the focal point of the sutta points out that the Buddha didn't just teach the Four Noble Truths. He taught the duties appropriate to each. And the fact that when you complete the duties, that's awakening. For example, with regard to suffering or stress, the First Noble Truth, the duty is to comprehend it. In comprehending, we'd learn in other parts of the canon that it means comprehending to the point of having no more passion, aversion, and delusion around it. Ordinarily, we wouldn't think that we'd have any passion for suffering. But remember, the Buddhist definition is the clinging to the five aggregates. And we're pretty passionate about that. We cling to these things, form, feeling, perceptions, thought constructs, consciousness, because we think they're going to provide happiness for us. And they do provide some pleasures. If they didn't provide any pleasures at all, we wouldn't have any passion for them. But the point the Buddha's trying to make is, compared to the Third Noble Truth, the ending of suffering, these things are painful. Painful in the fact that if you find any happiness there, it's not going to last. And even while it's lasting, it's not going to be dependable. So you're trying to comprehend that fact, that the things you're holding on to, and these aren't things, they're activities. Form, as the Buddha said, deforms. Feelings feel, perceptions perceive. Thought constructs put things together. Consciousness cognizes. These are activities we engage in. We keep repeating them over and over again. It's with these activities that we feed. You have the form of the body. You have the form of the food. The body needs the food. It feels pain when it doesn't get the food. It feels pleasure when it does. And it's just looking for food. If it sees something, the question is this food or is this not food? Think of a child crawling across the floor. Anything the child runs into, picks it up, puts it in his mouth. To test whether it's food or not, that's our first level of perception, actually. Then there are thought constructs. Suppose you do get something that you can't eat. Then the question is, can you eat it raw, or do you have to do something with it? You got a potato, you can't eat it, it's going to be poisonous. But if you cook it, it's okay. Then finally, this consciousness, which is aware of all these things. These are activities that we engage in. And one of the basic activities that defines us as beings, the fact that we feed off of these things. And again, we have to comprehend it to the point of no passion, aversion, delusion. That's asking a lot. And it's really quite radical. Suffering, the Buddha says, is not something that we simply experience on the passive end of the equation. We're actually doing it. The activity of the clinging is the suffering. That's something that's hard to comprehend, which is why we have to work so hard at the practice. This is the cause of suffering, the second truth is craving, and the duty there is to abandon it. When you have any craving around sensuality, a craving around becoming, which is the activity of taking on identity in a world of experience. Or craving of non-becoming, when you've got a particular identity in a particular world of experience, you decide you don't like it, you want to get rid of it. These forms of craving are the things that cause us to cling. And later the Buddha said that one of his prime insights, one of his awakening, was to realize that craving for non-becoming was part of the problem. Of course, that presented a question, was, what do you do? Well, as he pointed out later, you learn to see the activities that lead to becoming before you take on an identity, before a world of experience even forms in your mind. And you see the various activities that go into that, and you realize that they're not worth it. It's a value judgment. You see that they're ephemeral, untrustworthy. And how could you create anything that would be of real value out of them? They might say, well, it's the best I've got. Which is why the Buddha teaches the third noble truth, that it is possible to put an end to that craving and to attain the ultimate happiness. That's our reason for practicing. And that, the third noble truth, is to be realized. In other words, you have to learn how to experience it. And you do that by following the path, or developing the path, which is how the Buddha defines the duty there. What that means is you're not here just sitting and being open to the present moment. We focus on the present moment because there's work to be done here. When the Buddha defines alertness, one of the qualities of right mindfulness, it's focused on your actions. What are you doing right now? Be very clear about that and realize that you've got these duties. Like right now we're trying to develop mindfulness, develop concentration. Because realize it's going to be good for us now and on into the future. Remember the Buddhist definition of that first question that leads to discernment or wisdom. What when I do it will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness. Long-term. He's talking about time. He's not talking about just being in the present moment. Someone sent me an article today. It was in a British newspaper. It was about the Buddhist approach to child raising. It was treating child raising as a topic of meditation, purpose being to find a sense of freedom in the present moment and the choices it offered and how you deal with your child. Either there with presence and care, or either with aggressiveness and denial. You either try to exert control, or you surrender and trust the flow. That's a pretty bad recipe for child raising. And of course, it's false dichotomies all the way down the line. There are a lot of other choices, especially if the flow of your child right now is toward abusive behavior. You've got some standards that you've got to train the child in, so the child can live in peace and happiness in society, and also learn how to control his or her emotions, his or her behavior. Again, for the sake of a long-term happiness. But the whole idea that you want your experience of parenting to be one of freedom in the present moment. The Buddha never said you're going to find freedom in the present moment. The present moment is where you do your work. The goal is something that actually lies totally outside of the present moment. But it's by focusing our attention here that we get to do the work that needs to be done. Developing right view, right resolve, all the way down through right concentration. So you focus on what you're doing. And then you ask yourself, is it skillful? The three qualities the Buddha has you bring to right mindfulness. Mindfulness itself, which is the ability to keep something in mind. In which case you keep in mind the fact that one, you want to stay here with the breath. And then two, you want to learn how to remember how to recognize unskillful thoughts that would come up and destroy your concentration. and distinguish them from the skillful thinking that are actually part of right concentration as you begin to get the mind to settle down. As you adjust the object to fit the mind, adjust the mind to fit the object. Then there's alertness, watching what you're doing. And then there's ardency, the quality of mind, the quality of the heart that wants to really do this right. This is the quality that makes the other two right. In other words, mindfulness, you can keep anything in mind. As for alertness, you can watch yourself do anything, and it would count as alertness. But with ardency, you want to be mindful of things that are really skillful to be mindful of. And mindfulness is not just a non-judging awareness. As the Buddha said, the role of mindfulness on the path is to remember a right view about what's right and wrong in terms of views and resolves. So you can direct your efforts, your ardency, so you can do it well. Focus on the right points, focus on the right issues. So there's work to be done. And that's the message of this wheel the Buddha taught. There are basically four different duties. And he teaches Four Noble Truths because as we start out on the path, there are four different things we have to do. Some things we have to comprehend, some things we have to abandon, some things we have to realize, and others we have to develop. And as we practice, we get a better and better sense of which duty is appropriate at which time. Well, especially at the beginning, the development is going to be the primary duty. As you work on getting the mind into concentration, and work on all the qualities that need to be developed in terms of right views, right action, right speech, to make sure your concentration is not only solid, but it's focused in the right way, and it's reliable. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha lists right speech, right action, right livelihood before he lists the factors for concentration. Because the development of virtue makes you honest. You really have to look at what you're doing. You really have to keep the precepts in mind. And you have to do your best to stick by the precepts. And this focuses you on your intentions, because you break a precept only if you intentionally break it. That keeps you focused on the mind. And it makes you honest. And that honesty carries over into the concentration, and from the concentration it carries over into the discernment. So it's a complete path we have here. The Buddha is asking us to train both our hearts and our minds. Although in Pali they don't distinguish between the two. The word citta covers both. But it's a total training for the heart and mind. So we come to the present moment because there's work to be done. And the Dharma wheel lays out what the work is. So as you're sitting here and the mind wanders off, you don't just follow it and see where it's going to wander. You realize, okay, this is taking me away from my initial intention, which was to stay with the breath. So you drop those thoughts. Drop them incomplete. There's that tendency sometimes to say, well, let me finish this thought and then I'll get back to the breath. But then that thought has ramifications that lead to other thoughts and more thoughts, and then you find yourself hopping from train of thought to another train of thought. You end up in the Northwest Territories. You realize that you've left the breath, you drop the thought unfinished, get back to the breath. That's the quality of ardency. And then while you're with the breath, the quality of ardency is to try to be as attentive as possible to what kind of breathing is really good for the body right now. What does it need? What would feel really satisfying? Because a large part of concentration is to pull you into the present moment and keep you here by providing a sense of well-being, a sense that you feel really satisfied being here. Not because you've told yourself that you have to be satisfied, but you create the conditions. So the way you breathe feels energizing when you need to be energized, relaxing when you need to be relaxed. You do the work of the Dharma Wheel. And you find that the spokes begin to develop stronger and stronger. That's why that Dharma Wheel and they're all over there has 12 spokes. 4 truths, 3 levels of knowledge, knowing the truth itself, knowing the duty appropriate, and knowing that the duty has been completed. That's where we're headed.